Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Hey,
it's Nick.
Yes.
Pat Nick.
So this is episode 59 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Whoa, that's almost 60, man.
That is almost 60.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so...
time for some retirement benefits.
Indeed. Well, you know, it's America now, so more like 75. So my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And this is the Big Planet Comics podcast.
So it is.
Yep.
Indeed it is. As always, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Which you should do. You should go on to our webpage if you're too lazy to do that. We've got a Tumblr, which is exciting.
Yep. We got Facebook. Yeah, the Tumblr's new. Yep. Every day we're tumbling. BigPlanetComics.tumblr.com.
That Tumblr.
It's pretty easy to remember.
Tumblr.
Slash Tumblr.
GIFs of the Incredible Hulk. And we've got a Twitter.
We do.
Yeah.
At Big Planet Comics.
Tweet us.
What's been going on the Twitter, Jared?
Stuff.
Was it blowing up during SPX?
Not really. It was kind of sad.
The SPX Twitter was blowing up.
That's true.
But we're going to save that for another episode. We're going to have an SPX special early next week. So
that's for an SPX explosion.
Yeah, SPX explosion. Keep your ears out for that. Keep your ears
tuned.
Keep your ears peeled. Some upcoming signings and events here at the store.
Oh, yeah.
September 22nd, we got Raina Telgemeier signing copies of her new book, Drama.
That's this Saturday, man.
Yeah, that book was so good.
Sick.
And signing her old book, Smile, as well.
Saturdays are sick. Let's see. September 29th, we got Gordon Harris, creator of Pedestrian, a local guy. He's going to be...
his new graphic novel, Pedestrian.
Yeah, so check that out. On October 27th, 4 days before Halloween, All Hallows Eve.
Spooky.
We got District Comics signing at U Street.
That's scary.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And then November 3rd, we have Ben Hackey, creator of Zeta the Space Girl and Legends of Zeta the Space Girl.
Zeta.
He's going to be here, too.
Yeah.
And creator of ZD the Dinner.
ZD. He makes a good ZD.
Yeah.
Baked ZD.
So what have you guys been up to?
Oh, man. I went to SPX. Oh, wait. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but that's okay. We can say we went there. I went there, too. I was there.
I went to Pennsylvania.
You did?
Yeah, for a wedding.
I went to a bachelor party.
Do Patrick and Michelle listen to this podcast? I don't know.
Oh,
either
man.
Way, congratulations, Patrick and Michelle.
Yeah, got married and everything.
Yep, had a beautiful baby boy.
Wait, what?
Yep.
Wait, that's not true.
Not yet.
Skipped ahead a little
bit. Did they play like Zelda music at their wedding or anything?
Yeah.
Did they really?
No.
Oh.
They did play Game of Thrones music, though.
Did
they?
That's
course
really
they did.
Funny.
They walked away from the aisle to the Game of Thrones theme.
And then Patrick was beheaded at the end of the ceremony.
Well, it was played on a... There were two different instruments. I forget what it was, like a violin and a cello.
A zephyr.
Yeah.
Oh, they should have just played it on an MP3 player.
that would have been good.
It would have been cheaper. What about you, Jared? What have you been doing? I know you've been
I had a head cold for like the last week and a half, which like literally culminated in the middle of SPX. It was awful. So if anyone got sick at SPX, it wasn't me.
I'm feeling a little sniffly.
Wasn't me.
But I went to an awesome bachelor party with Nick.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
We ate a million pounds of food at Fogo de Chao.
Yeah, we ate our Brazilian steakhouse.
That's what you guys did instead of this podcast last week.
It was so good.
And I was just like double-checking exhibitor tables for SPX, basically.
I ate some delicious meat, in your honor.
Just shoveled meat into my mouth until I couldn't walk.
And then we all got dessert. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, you can get dessert at the steakhouse? Uh-huh. Yes.
What did I do? My zine finally came out.
Yeah.
Burr. Oh, yeah.
Yay.
I forgot where the button was.
Back.
It's been a long time since I rock and rolled. So that was exciting.
Your zine?
My zine is called Fight.
Okay.
It's a zine about fighting games. It's got a bunch of good art in it from people like Dustin Harbin, Lamar Abrams, Trad Moore, who you might know from Legends of... you might know him from this podcast.
Yeah. Indeed.
Coleman Engel, Brooke Allen, our friend Nick Liapis over here.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah. Center spread.
And
just the way I like Nick. Center spread with some staples in him.
And many more. You can pick that up here at the store if you want to get it.
You should.
Or you can go to, should I just say the store? Magnabeam.bigcartel.com. Go buy that zine. It's pretty good. But
cool.
Yeah, we might have a signing here. Maybe a joint release party signing thing with my thing and Andy, who has been on the podcast before as well, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got a new comic called Neon Super Gladiator that's pretty awesome.
Which we'll also talk about next SPX episode.
That's true, but anything else going on, you guys?
Probably, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been a blur of the last 2 weeks for all of us.
we'll talk a lot about it, but I will say SPX was awesome this year.
Yep.
Probably the best one ever, and maybe one of the best conventions I've ever been to.
It was so
I agree.
Good.
It's like the best holiday in comics, and yet all of us get completely fried out.
Something else also Something else huge happened to me today.
What was happened it?
Today?
A new Hobbit trailer.
Oh, oh yeah.
I did see it. Yeah.
I watched it like it five times.
Some, wait, you
some
got
laughing dwarves in it.
You got a new Hobbit trail for your
yeah,
guinea pig?
Yeah.
For the Hobbit trails.
Yeah, I watched the trailer like five times. It's so right? good.
I don't care.
So good.
I care.
Julian said about SPX, long-time listeners will remember Julian from the show as well. Yeah. He said for people that are sad that SPX is over, don't be sad that you only get one SPX. Be happy that you get two Christmases.
Nice. <true. Yeah. laughs> It's really true.
Yeah. All right. So, Nick, you got some news for us? Is there a little bit of news today?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it.
We got some exciting happenings in the Marvel movie universe. First of all, both of these things are related to Guardians of the Galaxy.
All right.
Jim Starlin, in some random interview, confirmed that Thanos is going to be in Avengers 2 and in Guardians of the Galaxy.
So which wait, is pretty sweet. Which one's coming out first?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, Avengers 2, I think it's 2014.
Yeah. So I figure Guardians of the Galaxy is probably going to end.
Explain who the hell Thanos is yeah, if you haven't read
it's going to be
comics.
Like a way for them to explain Thanos and how big of a threat he is. And I feel like at the end, like the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be like, we need to go to Earth.
No.
And then like, yeah.
They got Rocket Raccoon. They don't need to go to Earth. They can handle themselves.
Yeah. It'll be interesting.
Cool.
Also confirmed, James Gunn is going to be directing and writing it with help from Joss Whedon. Should be pretty
Wait,
interesting.
Doing what?
Writing and directing Guardians of the Galaxy.
And who is he?
James Gunn.
James Gunn. He wrote Scooby-Doo.
Fashion guy?
He wrote Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2.
Did he write Scooby-Doo 2?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Tim Gunn.
Nobody would really know him, but he wrote and directed a movie called Slither. He was kind of the second guy in charge over at Troma Pictures for a long time.
Really?
Yeah
that's what makes me excited.
Weird.
I'm like, a Troma guy is like directing a Marvel movie.
Wow.
And he also wrote and directed Super, which was came out a year ago, which is really good.
Yeah, awesome. Which is yeah, and he has kind of a connection to Joss Whedon through Nathan Fillion. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I'm excited about it no matter what.
Yeah, and I like that the fact that they went with somebody kind of weird, like not like. I don't know.
Yeah, like when they had Ang Lee direct true. Hulk.
Well, yeah. No, it's more like, you know.
Sam Raimi directing Spider-Man.
And James Gunn does have like kind of a sense of humor. Well,
it's
so
kind of like Joss Whedon directing Avengers.
Kind of.
It's like
maybe.
He's kind of in that. He's kind of in that realm. Like he's kind of goofy, action-y guy.
Yeah.
And he's good with like ensembles. Like, I don't know.
Sure, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But it's a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It's exciting either way.
That's true.
Yeah. What else you got, Nick?
All right, and then we have a bunch of new Marvel Now books.
Hit me, Marvel. Scoopsie.
All right, first of all, we got Cable and X-Force by Dennis Hopeless and Salvador LaRocca.
And Dennis Hopeless is awesome. He wrote that X-Men Season 1 book, which was really good.
And Super Legion good. Of Monsters, which was also
which
awesome.
Was also really good.
Promising.
So that's exciting. It's about Cable and X-Force on the run. And then there's a new Uncanny X-Force. Uncanny
new
X-Force
one?
With Rick Remender is ending. And then it's restarting again, I guess, which I don't understand the point of two X-Force books, but this one's by Sam Humphries and Ron Garney. Could be awesome.
Well, maybe there will be like an X-Force team that everybody's actually aware of, and then Uncanny X-Force will still be this sort of covert.
Well, that's what they've got now. They've got X-Force and Uncanny X-Force's books.
No, they don't.
Well, Cable and
X-Factor.
Yeah, that's different.
Too many X's.
Cable and X-Force is like just a bunch of people on the run from the Avengers.
Is it like that is it like that X-Men book where the X-Men come back to present time, but instead it's like they come from the 90s to the present time?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, wow, this place is a lot better.
And then like there's an issue where Shatterstar is like, wait, is Shatterstar from X-Force?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, I think.
Where he's like, I know I have some gum in one of these pouches. And then it's just the whole issue is him looking.
That's like Cable that's Cable coming into the future and be like, hey, dudes, where'd all the pouches go?
Oh, you mean Cable from the future? Yeah. Ahab?
Yeah. Oh, God. Don't even get me started.
And I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm so happy.
Just consider yourself lucky.
Next up, we got Thunderbolts by Daniel Way and Steve Dillon.
I predict this will be the least popular book of the new stuff.
I would think that just based on the title and the people involved. But the characters is the thing that people usually go for in comics, I feel. And this has Red Hulk, Punisher, Elektra, Deadpool, and I don't know, somebody else, but and Venom
on Thunderbolts
and Venom, yeah.
And aren't they all red or something?
Yeah, yeah. They all have Punisher. Like red things on their costume, and it's led by Thunderbolt Ross, who's the Red Hulk.
Oh, spoiler.
So it's Thunderbolt. Thunderbolts with an apostrophe, maybe?
Some people might still not know who the Red Hulk is.
Yeah.
Now you do.
And last and most amazing of all is Avengers Arena, which is kind of a Battle Royale / Hunger Games type thing.
What?
With Young Avengers characters on Murder World being hunted down.
Young Avengers and Avengers Academy, right?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Being forced, and awesome. Runaways characters are in it, too. And they're being forced to kill each other. And it's also written by Dennis Hopeless.
Wow.
With art by Kev Walker,
Who was on Thunderbolts about a year or two ago doing good stuff.
That was the most exciting thing. I was like, that sounds really cool. Awesome.
And also they're ending Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, yes.
Wait,
yeah. They're ending Amazing Spider-Man and Wolverine in December, which means there's a new Spider-Man and Wolverine in January, probably. Because they haven't announced any of the January Marvel Now things, and I figure
Spider-Man. It's all right. Spider-Man has been renumbered a couple times at this point.
It's not like Spider-Man's going to be gone.
Yeah, still.
And
weird.
I think it's going to be complete. Something, you know, crazy is going to happen in 700, which will lead into that. We'll see.
Okay.
Cool. So that's it for the news.
Thanks for your Marvel news update.
I know. There was no, like, DC news.
Come on, DC, step up.
Well, they just did, they did their number zeros, and there hasn't really been any announcements of new titles or anything.
What about
Before Watchmen?
Their movies.
Exactly.
Still out.
Some new Before Watchmen titles.
Yeah, and they don't have any movies coming out anytime soon except for Superman, so.
Yeah. Wonder Woman?
No.
Joss Whedon?
Nope.
Oh, yeah, there's talks of a new Wonder Woman series.
Oh, really?
That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It's like Smallville. It's like before she was Wonder Woman.
Really? Arrow coming out.
Yeah, that looks bad.
Oh, yeah, Arrow.
I mean, I don't like Smallville, though, so I'm not the guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
That's it.
Maybe we should do some viewer mail. What do you guys think?
Yes,
hit me.
Let's do it. All right. We got a few questions this week. I think I'm going to save one of these questions for our SPX special because it's all about SPX. So Sam Marks, you got to wait till next time.
Sorry, that's fine.
Sam Marks, I like your Mastodon t-shirt. All right, so the first question is from actually both of these questions are from the same guy.
Who are they?
Aaron M, who has sent us quite a few questions recently.
Yeah.
So he says, guys, as always, I love the show and love each of you individually as well. Yes, in that way.
That's true.
Anyway, question for you all. Do you ever suffer from backlog fatigue? By this I mean you have a pile, a list, or a stack of things you want to read, mean to read, but just can't ever seem to get the time to read. In terms of this, what right now is your biggest regret not having read?
Oh, wow.
Thanks, Aaron M. The M is for obnoxious.
My answer is always.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a while, I had this really big stack of just issues of stuff that I wanted to read, and eventually I just put them in a box, and I'm like, I'm never going to read these. Right now, I still have stacks of trades that I need to read. And as far as the biggest regret, I feel like Preacher. It's probably the biggest one.
Because
I started Preacher. And I got to
the
fourth volume, and then I ran out of money, so I wasn't buying them for a while.
Yeah.
But now I just recently bought all the hardcovers, so I think I'm going to try to catch up on that.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I think it's shifted. I think Aaron's complaint or question is applies a lot to our customers, because it's really easy to buy tons of issues and just not get around to some of them. And for us, we buy less issues. So.
But a backlog is just like for me, the way I think of it, it's I have a reading pile. It's this whole store.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. It's but we don't have the stack of stuff that we've already picked out. It's just everything on the shelves that we look at.
Well, I have that, too. I have my whole house.
I have stacks of trades.
Yeah, trade paperbacks, certainly. I have tons of stuff.
Oh, so much stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what happens with me is and I'm sure it happens with all of us, is we're spending so much time reading new stuff because we want to know what's good. And
we're trying to help you people.
We want to let you guys know what's good.
Yeah.
And we get really far behind maybe on things we like a lot.
And I think the other thing is that there's so many things coming out as graphic novels. There's just so many comics, period, coming out right now that you just can't keep up with even the good stuff. Even if we're self-selecting and only reading awesome things,
I mean, we can't even read all the really good things, and we read a lot of comics.
Yeah. So my big one right now is I'm regretting that I'm not caught up on Sweet Tooth. I love that series, and I'm 10 issues behind it.
Yeah, even that one, I started reading in trades, and I'm two trades behind. Same with Unwritten. There's a million Tezuka books that are in English that I haven't read yet, which is disgusting.
And also, I just totally drew a blank. I was gonna. Oh, Invincible. I'm way far behind on Invincible. It's
really?
Also one of my favorite comics. So
yeah.
These things happen. It happens to all of us. Even people that supposedly read comics all day, even though we're just on Facebook or whatever.
So if you could post more comics on Facebook, it'd be great.
I will say that I don't have really much of a backlog as far as issues of comics that I want to read.
You are the beast of reading.
I managed to read every issue of anything that comes out that I want to read.
That's incredible.
Within like a week or two. So.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you got the stamina. So hopefully that answered your question, Aaron. You should have told us what your biggest regret was. We would have been curious to hear that.
Or anybody out there, tell us some regrets.
Yeah, let us know. Tweet it to us @ Big Planet Comics. Tell us what your biggest regret is.
Confess to us.
Not having read stuff. Yeah.
In general, we want to hear complaints.
Yeah, we want to shame you.
just comics related, please.
Oh, that'd be much more interesting if it wasn't.
Okay, now we got another. Wait, did we already answer this question about our best and worst con experiences?
Nope.
Maybe. Okay, well, here we go. Hi, guys. Love the show, of course. This is also from Aaron M.
Yeah.
And I have a question for you all. Just having attended the Rose City Comic Con this weekend, so how far behind are we?
Rose City.
Is
that Portland?
Maybe it's like in San... For...
I think Portland's the Rose City.
I think it's in San Ferrego.
Whatever. Portland.
I found myself wondering what your best and then worst con experiences were. I mean, individual encounter with a creator, vendor, or even another con attendee. Thanks. And then he forgot to sign it, and then he sent me another email, and it said Aaron M. The M is for forgetful.
Wow,
I got a couple. So I don't know if these are like best or where. Well, no, I'll start with the best one. So I was at Dragon Con one year. Actually, my worst one's at Dragon Con.
Oh. the best and worst of comics at one convention.
Dragon Con is like the convention you go to if you want stories to tell, basically. Yeah. But I went to Dragon Con one year, and I sat down in the cafeteria, and sitting at the same table as me were Ray Bradbury, Ray Harryhausen, and John Carpenter.
Wow.
What?
And yeah, they had just come off of a panel.
And Jesus Christ.
And Jesus Christ was there as well.
Trying to get their autographs.
And I just kind of sat there and listened to them talk, and it was like a really amazing experience. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that one's pretty good.
I met Lou Ferrigno. No, that's not. I feel like my best, even though this was the best SPX, the last one, I feel like my favorite is still the first one just because... It was like an explosion of awesome. Not too long ago, like 5 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, the first experience hanging out with these artists, and I remember getting drunk with like, I don't want to name any names. People that I was like, oh, I didn't know this guy was such an alcoholic. But
that's
awesome. It's great. Yeah, it was good times.
What about you, Jared?
I think, again, in SPX, where Stan Sakai, who's one of my favorite creators for Usagi Yojimbo, came to the convention as a special guest, and someone asked me to go pick him up at the airport, which I totally freaked out about, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to talk to him about in the car. And it was awesome. He's super nice, and so we talked in the car and all the way back from the airport.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
It was really cool.
All right, let's get to some terrible stuff. Okay, so I was at Dragon Con.
Yep.
Speaking of Dragon
Con. And I was waiting in line. I'm going to be ashamed of it, especially when you guys know how much trash I talk about Kevin Smith. I was waiting in line to get Jason Mewes' autograph.
Oh, God.
What?
This was right after Mallrats had come out.
Oh, man, that was a great
because
movie.
Yesterday was my 75th birthday. And
happy birthday, Kevin.
So, and his line was going in front of another guy's line table, and this was Mike TV, the kid Mike TV from Willy Wonka.
Oh, wow.
The little cowboy kid from Willy Wonka.
Nope.
And you don't know who that is?
Well, he was probably an adult at that point, right?
Oh,
yeah.
So like he was in the original Willy Wonka. He was one of the
little kids. Yeah. He was Mike TV. But anyway, he got somebody who worked at the con to move the line so it wasn't in front of his table.
Oh, that's awful.
And then nobody was in front of his table the whole time. But then the worst thing that actually happened, this is just I thought that was kind of sad. That's like my saddest convention story. But then, me and my wife were at the end of the line, and there were two people behind us. And Jason Mewes signed our stuff, looked at his watch, and then was like, all right, I'm done. Wow. And like left these just like two people.
There's two people left?
There were two people left, wow. And they had been waiting in line for like an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
But so, were you one of them?
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, that's a great story.
Well, then,
you basically made the cutoff.
I was just like, this guy's a jerk. Also, he was wearing a safari hat. And he had a big mustache, and he was wearing an all-over print button-up Ninja Turtle shirt.
Wow.
Yeah, dude's awesome. All right, so what's your terrible stories?
I don't have anything that bad, but the one I always go to is the one with, God, what's her name? I always forget.
Don't tell that story.
No?
Nah. All right. You don't need to tell that.
Why?
I don't know.
There's some things that she should not be told.
Maybe. She might be.
Yeah. All
right. Well, you just tell the story without saying who it was.
Oh, some comic artist... I was at SBX and I was going around getting people to draw me Skrulls. And she's like, you know, they're all indie artists, but they're all, you know, whatever, they're down. They were like, all right, sure, yeah, whatever, I'll draw a Skrull. And then, like, some people were like, what's a Skrull look like? I'm like this. And they were like, all right, I'll draw something like that. And then, you know, I went up to this one person and I was like, oh, can you draw me a Skrull? Like, I like your stuff. And she's like, yeah, I'll do you a sketch. What is it? And I'm like, a Skrull. And she's like, what is that? I don't know what that is. And I was like, oh, here, it's a picture of this. It's from, like, these Marvel comics. She's like, oh, I don't do superhero stuff. And I was like, it was such a, like, stuck-up thing to say. And I was just
not, man. She's got pride.
It's like, I'm
like,
out of here.
Whatever.
Just get out of here. Get out of here. Like, she was willing to draw a sketch until she was like, oh, that's a superhero thing? Never mind. I was like, get out of here.
Nice. I don't, like, senses of humor.
Yeah.
It's true.
Just the way she said it.
It's basically like somebody, like somebody telling you that they don't like Die Hard.
Yeah.
What? The first one? That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what about you, Jared? Any really terrible stuff?
Not super terrible, but when I went to Angoulême, the French Comics Festival, and there was John McCrae, famous for drawing Hitman and lots of terrible other comics, who got exceedingly drunk and basically threatened me, which was very uncomfortable considering I was very young at the time.
What did he say to you?
I don't want to mention.
Was it bad words?
It was that threatening.
Yeah.
No, it was just made me very uncomfortable.
What did you do to him?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nope. I guess he did not like the way I looked.
That's why Garth Ennis probably likes him, because he's surly.
Yep.
All right. Well, Aaron, I hope that answered your question. Again, let us know what your best and worst con experiences were on our some other media. Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just let us know.
Facebook it up.
All right. So that's it for viewer mail. As always, if you have questions, you can send those to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. That's the email.
Or you can leave a message on our podcast.
You can leave a message on our podcast hotline. I see you looking at that piece of paper over there. You know what it is. Nick, why don't you tell people that
1-703-539-CAST.
What was that number again?
1-703-539-CAST.
Yeah.
The T is for trouble.
The T is for
cast.
Telephone.
Cast. All right. So that's it for the questions. Maybe we should do some reviews.
Hit me.
Let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, up first this week, we've got Doctor Strange Season 1 by Greg Pak and Emma Rios.
So we're going to start with the greatest thing ever?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Let's do it.
Is that this one? Then let's just keep going with what we were doing.
All right. It's so good. So again, we've reviewed almost all these that have come out. Have we done all of them?
No, we didn't do Daredevil or Ant-Man.
We didn't do Daredevil or Ant-Man, but we'll let you know they weren't good.
Yeah, but in general, these have been good to great, and this is one of the new great ones. It is unlike some of the other ones, like the whole Season 1 line is basically a standalone graphic novel taking the earliest days of these Marvel superheroes and telling a newish story with them. Some stuck very close to the origin
kind
story. Others have built on it a lot more.
Modern retelling
right.
of their origin.
With reimagining.
Reimagining.
Imaginationing. And this one, very quickly, which I thought was pretty interesting, unlike some of them, retells his origin of his, like, why he's on the quest to become he eventually becomes a magician. Is that he's in an accident and he's a cocky surgeon, his hands get all messed up and he can't find anyone to help fix them, so he turns to magic.
Yeah, you get all that in the first like two pages. Yeah.
Which was great. So then this moved on to a much cooler interaction where he ends up in Tibet, or you know, the mystical highlands of Asia.
Yeah.
Where he meets the Ancient One, I believe.
Yep.
Who is some sort of crazy mystic who claims to have real magical power, and meets two of his apprentices who are, let's see, what's Mordo? Morgo?
Mordo, yeah.
Mordo, who's his cocky and evil assistant, and then...
Oh, he's his other disciple.
Disciple, that's what I'm saying. And then Wong, who's his cocky but awesome assistant, who in the original Doctor Strange comics is basically just the inscrutable Asian servant, which is really weird and doesn't fit in the modern style so much. So now he's just this awesome kung fu guy who's trying to learn magic and is much better at kung fu than magic.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he and Doctor Strange Doctor Strange, whatever, are like very competitive with each other almost immediately off the bat, because they both have huge egos and they both are
awesome in different areas.
Yeah, and kind of used to being the best at what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah,
and that results in a lot of fun kind of rivalry stuff.
Yeah, and then they both play off the there's like a archaeologist, or what is she, like a mystical expert of some sort.
Yeah, I think
who shows up, and she's kind of the straight character that's just kind of there.
But also the, you know, exotic love interest potential for both of them. Yeah. And then, of course, Mordo, his the disciple of the Ancient One, goes evil very, very quickly, and is then the big threat throughout the comic. And
the main thrust of it is that there's these three rings that can control the Vishanti and Doctor Strange and the Vishanti, who are like these ancient beings of magic.
Three magical rings.
Yeah, and so they need to find them before Mordo does. Yep. It takes control of the Vishanti.
Rings and Mordor?
Yeah. There's a funny Hobbit joke.
Yeah, there actually is.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so big magical quest, jet setting around the world. It's like Indiana Jones with magic and kung fu. But that's the story. So that's all Greg Pak, and he does a great job with it. Like, there's lots of good interactions and tensions and stuff. Then you get Emma Rios drawing this art.
God.
Who's great. She has an art style that's kind of hard to describe. I mean, it's got a pretty heavy manga influence, but then also I'd say it's from a school similar to somebody like Paul Pope or Nathan Fox as well.
Becky Cloonan.
But it's a lot smoother than their work. Like, her stuff is very stretchy and dynamic, which is really great. And she uses it to great effect when they're swinging their arms around, casting spells and things. But where her art really shines in this book, I think, is in the last third.
Yeah.
When things get fighty. It turns basically into like Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
It gets pretty
like
epic.
Like epically big.
Yeah. And I don't know if
cosmic battles.
I don't know if she colored this book, but I do want to say that coloring in this book is like fantastic.
Color artist, Jordi Belair.
Good job, Jordi.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
Jordi LaForge.
The art is just, I don't know. I don't even know. It's the best.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably a lot of people have seen her art before.
She did Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, and she did the Daredevil Spider-Man crossover issues that came out about a year ago with the Black Cat, and those were really great. And I don't know. She did the Strange miniseries as well.
Yeah, the Strange Mark Waid one. What was it called?
It was just called Strange.
Strange, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was good. My one complaint is with her art is that it's very different from like the Ditko old school Doctor Strange stuff when it comes to like when there's actually magic stuff happening. The older style is very clear of like weird mystical lines coming out of things and like very clearly delineated.
This is a little more art.
And this is very like chaotic and crazy colors. And she draws it very much as like rather than a simple effect, it's like a whole area being affected. So it's just this kind of riot of magic and stuff happening.
It's very kinetic, everything she draws.
That's kind of the point. Like, all of these people that are using the magic in the book, like, don't know how to use it.
That's true.
They're having trouble controlling it, so it gets kind of crazy. But then when they start actually using it correctly, it's more focused later on.
Yeah, and her lines, even in those, she uses like a lot of geometrical stuff, like perfect circles and perfect squares and things like that to sort of show the magic when they're getting
better.
Take it
back. She's super genius.
No, she does a really great job on this. And
that's awesome.
The buildup is so fun, and you start to really care about the characters.
Yeah.
And
really well done.
And then once it gets to this final battle, it's just so intense. It's pretty amazing.
I hope that if there is a Doctor Strange movie, it's as good as this.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be so good.
Yeah. No, that would be fantastic. Definitely a high recommendation for this one. I mean, for me, this was the top three of these would have been this Hulk and
X-Men,
which are all such totally different books from one another.
But all so good.
Very good.
But all really read really well. So, yeah, Doctor Strange Season 1. Check it out.
Check it.
Check it. Okay, so what do we got next? We got Ghost Number Zero.
Ghost.
Introducing the Ghostface Killer, and no one's getting iller. this is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Phil Noto. This is like a lot of the Dark Horse Number Zeros that have come out recently. Collection of stuff that has appeared in Dark Horse Presents.
Yep. So they're going to follow this up with a 4-issue miniseries, but this issue zero is the three short stories that they're sequential stories from Dark Horse Presents.
Which, again, like a lot of these Dark Horse Number Zeros feel like a number one.
Yeah, I mean, it introduces all the main characters and
kind of weird and unfortunate.
Their motivations and stuff. So, yeah.
But it makes sense that, you know, people who've got those don't want to buy this as number one of the series.
Yeah.
Like, I've read all this.
Yeah.
But
it's still odd, but still.
Yeah. Well, it's just weird that they're using Dark Horse Presents as like a launching ground for series as opposed to like... Yeah. It seems like they're starting what is like this is very obviously a long story.
Yeah.
Right.
And were they initially planning on putting all of this in Dark Horse Presents and then like just decided to make it a miniseries?
No, they've done that for a few other ones now.
Yeah,
I think
it's just a weird way to do it.
Yeah, that's odd. But this is awesome.
Yeah.
So Kelly Sue DeConnick is kind of upcoming rising star
she's writing the new Captain Marvel series for Marvel right now.
Captain Comics.
Two Marvels confused.
She's about to start writing Avengers Assemble. And she's great on this.
Yeah, she's a good writer, and when accompanied by a good artist, which maybe hasn't happened on her other books, yeah, I feel like her storytelling shines through even more. Yeah, this book is, it's like surprisingly funny.
Yeah.
Do you guys know anything about Ghost? Like, did you guys read Ghost?
Basically, Dark Horse had their failed or sort of successful attempt at their own superhero universe back in the late 90s.
Was that like Mr. X?
Like Mr. X and Barbed Wire and Ghost and like some really weird mix of characters that, you know.
So this was a shared universe with all those characters?
Yeah, that's why it was super weird. But Ghost was this woman who dressed all in white and had like kind of the same
big
design.
Boobs.
Yeah, big boobs and like a hood. But it's. I could be remembering this wrong, but she ran around with two pistols.
Yeah.
Like very much.
Yeah, I think that's
like
right.
A
yeah.
Hard boiled sort of thing. Other than that, remember nothing about her.
Yeah, I mean, so. I never read any of that stuff. That's why I was curious.
Yeah.
There are several Ghost omnibus collections out now if you want to catch up on the old
stuff. But I don't think I do. You don't need to. This is set up as a good jumping on point for new readers. Like, I didn't know anything about Ghost, and I learned enough, and there's enough mystery about her that I don't need to read anything else. Like, basically, in the story, these guys come across this box.
That's basically like a ghost trap from Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yep. And they like open it and this woman comes out and it's weird because she's not, is she like a ghost? Because she's...
That's a mystery.
Yeah, that's part of the mystery, I guess. She's intangible when she wants to be, but otherwise she can touch people and she's hungry, so she eats and stuff. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's this kind of weird mix of supernatural.
Isn't
that
similar to the movie Ghost? That they're like intangible, but then sometimes they can move things and stuff.
Yeah, but do they get hungry in that though?
Well, they're hungry for love.
Like if Ghost is a horror story, hunger for love.
Yeah, they're hungry.
This is a lot like the movie Ghost.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of like she makes pottery.
Yeah.
No. But so basically they let her out and they're like these two guys who kind of seem to be at odds with each other. One's like really fame hungry and one's just sort of more interested in
the paranormal.
Yeah,
they have like a Ghost Hunters reality show.
Yeah, and so they plan to kind of reveal her to the world, and then the one guy's like, nah, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm actually gonna like help her. That's what it seemed like. I don't know. Yeah.
And then some sketchy people come looking for the box, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's basically.
And then she kind of reveals herself and becomes a bit of a superhero, I guess. And
sort of.
Yeah, in a really messed up way.
Yeah, of
but
course.
I don't want to say too much about it. That's one of the kind of there's a kind of shocking moment in this book where you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, snap.
But and basically by the end of this they just decide
they're gonna find out what her story is.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. It's a little threadbare for like a whole issue. I don't know, but I think it's because it's these three really short stories
written
put together,
three separate stories.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, I'm intrigued, and I thought Phil Noto's artwork was really good as usual.
Yeah,
and
always.
Kelly Sue DeConnick injected a lot of humor into this, which I think helps a lot too.
Oh.
And it's
definitely
check it
out.
It's a good zeroth issue.
There you go.
What do we have next year? We've got The Hypo, The Melancholic Young Lincoln. By Noah Van Sciver.
So
I do love Noah Van Sciver stuff, but unfortunately, I did not get a chance to read this.
Boo.
It is quite long and quite dense.
Yeah, I had like 45 minutes left, and I had to read three graphic novels, and this one looked like it would take longer than that.
Take a long time. So I've only read a few other things by Noah Van Sciver. He did another one, The Death of Reverend Elijah Lovejoy. Is that the title?
And he also did that book called 1999, which we reviewed on the podcast.
Film. Oh, right. Yeah. So he has this very interesting... I wouldn't say fixation, but focus on historical stuff from the 19th century or oldie times. And so as far as I can tell, this is a very well-researched, it's true story about Lincoln when he was basically just starting out as a lawyer.
Yeah, it's about him courting his love.
But it's also just his early days, and that's like one of the themes of it. But the other theme, the hypo, is from one of his letters that he writes referring to being affected by the hypo as in hypochondriac. And apparently Lincoln had some really dark, depressing times where he came near to death and or suicide. Yeah. And his life was kind of violent. Like, this is right when he's starting off as a assistant lawyer and kind of trying to become one. He hasn't even trained himself up yet. And just his business falls apart and all of his friends move away and his relationships are ending. And, you know, he's getting challenged to duels. There's some dark stuff in
there.
It kind of goes crazy.
It's a fascinating side of Lincoln that I don't think most people have seen. He doesn't have a beard in this.
Yep.
Or a top hat. Oh, no, he does have a top hat, but only sometimes.
Yeah.
It's weird. It seems very honest and kind of There's some really funny, I don't know if funny is the word, but
kind of like some of the dialogue is so hilarious. There's one scene really good styled.
Yeah, like his partner, his lawyer partner, Speed is like kind of a
now Speed's
not
his,
a ladies'
his
man.
Crazy roommate.
Yeah, well, isn't he his business? Oh, no, he's not his business partner. He's just the guy he lives with.
Yeah.
But he's like a crazy, like, nymphomaniac.
Yep.
Like different women in his room every night.
Usually and, prostitutes.
And there's a really funny scene where he sends Lincoln to the whorehouse, basically. He's like, you need to, like, you know, you need to get some. So here, I'm gonna send you to this place. Because Lincoln's depressed about his girlfriend that left him or whatever. And he sends him to this place and... You know, he meets his prostitute and they kind of start doing some stuff. And then Lincoln's like, I can't do this. I got to go.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's like really honest. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I can't afford this right now. I need to like save some money. And she's like, oh, okay. And then he leaves and then he comes back. He's like, I left my hat. It's
yeah,
I don't know.
He's like
just,
apologizing. And she's like, you're a very polite young man.
It's just so funny. I don't know.
Yeah, it's completely great.
There's some more. There's a lot of stuff about him and his fiance and how
Mary
he's
Todd.
Not sure about her and
spoiler,
if he wants to marry her.
Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I don't know, it takes some crazy turns in here. You learn. It also focuses a lot on his friends and their kind of adventures and their.
Yeah, there's so many themes of this. I mean, like at the time, Lincoln had just started running with the Whig Party, which had passed a platform. To try to build up the infrastructure of Illinois and like which puts the state into a lot of debt. So he's got a lot of pressures on him and, you know, he's trying to be a politician and find someone to be with for the rest of his life. And he's horribly sick and he's trying to become a lawyer and he's got all these failures. The thing I liked about that was like the cartooning on this was so amazing that like you get the scenes when he starts getting sick and it's just like these intense like
yeah he's got so much
sweat and like
sweat on
pain
his
and like
vomit everywhere
and like there's the theme of like kind of the flashes of light when like Mary Todd has horrible migraines probably brought on by stress or something else so she sees those too and just like when he's getting horribly sick and just like people going crazy and
well it's got like these old timey cures like they try like bloodletting where they just like cut him until he bleeds out and like almost dies.
Yeah.
And they're like, maybe that'll fix it. And that doesn't work. So then they're like, oh, let's give him some mercury.
Yeah. Oh,
and so he gets really sick. And I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to learn all these things. And
yeah, it's awesome. It's I will just say this book is fantastic and everyone should buy it.
If you're a history buff, highly
like
recommended.
Me. Yeah.
What if you hate history like me?
Then you should read it because it's amazing cartooning.
Sounds good. All right. cool. Well, up next, I definitely want to read that book. But now I feel like I don't have to. I guess that's what people get when they listen to this podcast. They're like, why read comics when these guys can just tell me everything?
I left out the duel. There's so much good stuff in that.
Oh, I do like duels. I read a whole book about the history of duels, and it was pretty amazing.
Well, you should read this one because Lincoln is the aggrieved party, and he sets up the conditions, and they're amazing.
Awesome.
That's all I'll say.
Does he say I demand satisfaction?
No, because the other guy's demanding satisfaction.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good enough for me. all right. Up next, we've got a book called The Secret of the Stone Frog. This is by David Nitra. I'm going to pretend it says Nitra. It's N-Y-T-R-A. But
Nitra.
This is a new book from Toon Books, which is Françoise Molé's children's line. And they put out a bunch of cool stuff. I think we've talked about a couple
of
books.
We've done a few.
Yeah.
They're usually for very, very young readers, probably up to like age 6.
This is probably for the oldest.
Is the most challenging and certainly the longest book. They've been really short kind of picture books in a lot of ways. This is an actual
Seems more like a whole graphic novel. So the basic story of this is kind of going to be a hard book to talk about.
It's like Little Nemo meets Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I mean I think that's very fair. But beyond that, it's kind of a hard book to talk about.
No, it's crossed with Miyazaki adventure stuff and like labyrinth of, you know, kids on a quest to find their way home and
Like Alice in Wonderland or Little Nemo. But the art is very very, very influenced by both of those things. The human figures are in this. Basically, it's about a brother and a sister who wake up and they're kind of in this fantasy world.
And they're trying to find their way home. And the only thing leading them home are these stone frogs that they keep finding.
Who talk.
And
they give directions.
On their way to each of these frogs, they kind of meet up with, you know, one crazy group of characters after another.
There's like a woman with giant bees and...
Yeah, and, you know, there's...
Bunch of humanoid animals and...
Yeah, and then...
Monsters.
Monsters and, like, this crazy, like, almost M.C. Escher-ish type castle thing they get stuck in.
Yeah.
And, and all the art, they're drawn in a very, like Little Nemo way.
Yeah.
And then I feel like a lot of the backgrounds and the other characters are drawn in a way that's very similar to, like, the more... Edwardian Victorian guys like Arthur Rackham or John Tenniel. Yeah. There's a lot of cross-hatching and things
so
like that.
Detailed and
Yeah. Yeah, and I think all the backgrounds are detailed and look great. I don't love the looks of the main characters so much. I feel like they're a little inconsistent and a little, I don't know, something.
They're a little over simple, maybe.
Trying to show the unreality of the narrator and the. Nah, I got nothing.
Well, but I don't mind the simplification. I mean, I love Crockett Johnson's art, right. Which is like the simplest thing you'll
you
ever see.
Like,
or
I think the design. I think
I don't like the design, and then I feel like they tend to be a little amorphous, like their head shapes change and stuff like that.
But God, the backgrounds.
But the backgrounds are really well drawn, and the pacing in this book is great. I mean, it very much feels like Alice Through the Looking Glass. You know, it's. There's like the equivalent of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party and stuff like that.
There's some very interesting characters and designs for weird creatures and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, overall, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it's great.
It feels a little disconnected from point A to point, but like they just kind of go to one place and then go to another.
Story.
Yeah. And there's not, I don't really get a good theme to the book. Like they are just trying to get home, but there's not really much to it beyond that.
There's a little bit of a theme that's kind of introduced near the end.
They explain a little bit, but it's not set up at all as a theme. Here's an explanation.
And even when that happens, it's not like you don't see how the other elements of the book maybe led up to that.
That's true.
And you kind of do.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. There was something that didn't feel very full about it to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a kid's book, but yeah. I mean, I actually enjoyed reading it. I think my biggest concern with this book is, like, I don't know that kids would actually like this.
No.
Maybe. I don't know. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not even the weird. I don't know. It's just, like, there's something a little stark about it that I think.
It's like a simple book that adults should be reading. You know, it's not. It's, like, maybe the wrong audience.
And it's in black and white, too, which a lot of kids are not really into.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably certainly true. But overall, I mean, I think it's definitely worth taking a look at. I don't want to, like, it sounds like I'm, like, crapping all over it, but I actually thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And compared to, like, some of these other books we're going to be talking about in a minute, it's, like, Pulitzer Prize-winning material. But, that's The Secret of the Stone Frog. I don't know.
No.
I thought I was good. Actually, when I started talking about it, I thought I was going to be a lot nicer about it than I was. It's definitely not bad. I'll say that. Okay, up next. Oh, well, never mind. Up next, we have a really good book. This is Stumptown 2, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Case of the Baby. Okay, that's weird. It's actually, when you read the book, the title is kind of cool.
I just
didn't realize they used the word case twice.
Yeah.
So this is the second Stumptown series, and this is written by Greg Rucka and art by Matt Southworth, who are the same people that did the first one, right?
Yeah.
So the thing about this is Rucka lives in Portland, and so this is set in Portland, Oregon, and it's just hard-boiled, modern, private eye investigative stuff where, I can't remember what her name is.
Dex.
Who's just kind of tough... female private investigator who does her own thing, and this case I feel like I honestly can remember very little about the first one because it took so long for it to finish up that first case case she was on. But this one is off to a roaring start. It's basically there's a local rock band in Portland who's the lead guitarist has one of her guitars stolen, which is like her favorite guitar, so it has a lot of sentimental value, but also because it's associated with her so much, it might have a lot of like financial value. And so that's the first case.
And that's the baby. She calls the guitar her baby.
The velvet guitar case. there's very quickly a lot of ramping up of like interwoven plots. You know, there's like reference that Dex, won't work for certain people in town because she obviously
is that reference to the first one? Because I never finished the first one.
No, that's the character from the first one. I can't remember exactly what happened. Like,
but
her
basically,
brother died and some
other
stuff.
She's got things that she won't work with certain people, and she has, bad blood with, it's like all private eyes. They've got a horrible backstory and people who hate them and, lots of good stuff like that. And then there's a great twist at the end that this is going to be a much crazier thing she has to investigate than she thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this book is a lot of setup but it sets the mystery up in a way that's pretty interesting. Like, I actually want to know who stole his guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
And, just that alone means that that Greg Rucka is definitely doing something right.
Yeah.
We talked before about when Mind the Gap came out that there aren't like a lot of really like truly mystery comics that come out.
True.
So for this to be kind of a mystery and to work as well as it does is cool. It kind of reminds me of something like Chinatown a little bit. It's got a little bit of that feel. I think there's going to be much more to it, obviously, than just a stolen guitar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, will make things interesting.
The twist at the end will show there's going to be a lot more. Yeah.
I will say, I don't know if Matthew Southworth's art was as good in this as it was last time. There were a couple of little weird printing issues in the comic, so I don't know if that had something to do with it. But was it in full color last time?
Yeah.
Why do I remember it as being in black and white?
It's that hard, boy.
Because all the covers are like kind of black and white.
Yeah, but overall, I think the art is actually really good.
Yeah,
and
it fits the story. You know?
Yeah, and all the characters are really well written. They're characters that just show up for a page or two, but they always have a lot of personality.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it was a cool book.
Really
I liked
good.
It.
Sweet
yeah.
mystery time.
Yeah, I'm excited to. What did you say? Sweet mystery time?
Yeah.
That's all right. If you want some sweet mystery time, read Stumptown 2, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case, number one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So up next, we have a book that this came out. It's called Sword of Sorcery, number zero. So this is two stories. One is a Amethyst Princess of Gemworld story that's by Christy Marks, who actually created Gem and the Holograms. So I was actually really excited about this, with art by Aaron Lopresti, who has done good work in the past. And then the second story is Beowulf.
Yep.
And that is written by Tony Bedard.
Yeah.
Who wrote...
Negation.
He did some...
Negaton?
He did some...
What was it called?
Negation.
Was it Negation?
Green Lantern Core as well.
What was that book that he did that was with Adam Clark that was actually like... pretty decent.
Oh yeah, he did.
Did he do Aquaman?
No, that
he did something that we're like, wow, this is good. Tony Bedard.
What was
stuff.
That stupid book
Guardians
called?
Of the Galaxy?
No, it was called like I don't remember. Anyway, and Jesus Saiz does art on the Beowulf thing, and I don't really know that guy's stuff. I know I've seen it before, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So should we start with Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld?
Yeah.
So Amethyst Princess of Gemworld was like a kids series that DC did.
Okay,
in
that
the
was
80s.
My first question. It was for kids.
Yeah, it was made. Okay. It was made to sell toys.
Okay. Yep,
no idea.
They had like a line of Amethyst.
I was
toys.
Not the target audience.
Was there a line of toys?
Yeah, it was like She-Ra. Like
I'm gonna buy an
Nick
Amethyst
knows
Princess
all about
Gemworld
it.
Toys. But so this is definitely not a kids comic.
It's yeah, that's the thing.
It is
the thing is like
weird yeah, thing. It's
I,
weird.
I liked a lot of things about this comic. I like the setup, and it's interesting, and the world.
Okay, well, let's start with the setup and kind of talk about what's going on.
Basically, this girl is going into high school, and her mom has been training her to fight with the sword for some reason, and she's not quite sure why. She thinks her mom's just kind of crazy, and they keep moving from town to town. And turns out on her 18th birthday, she has to go back to wherever they came from, which... you find out is Gemworld and
a fantasy realm.
She's an heir to like the mystical amethyst power, and there's an evil queen trying to get that power from her.
So that's the basic
that's
story
the setup.
And then
and that's cool with a kid's thing
and know? Then in between there there's an attempted gang rape.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's really weird.
It's really off-putting.
And it's really off-putting, and it's like this sort of trend that I'm
yeah.
I don't know, it's this, I don't know what's going on over at DC, but it seems
there's been a lot of
like you take a perfectly good comic like this, like I actually thought this was all right. It was
yeah,
you know, it wasn't
it
wasn't
bit.
As fun as I was hoping it was going to be, but then but it was still okay, and I was reading
and
it. And then
it.
All of a sudden, like, there's this girl, and she's about to get raped. And it's just like,
yeah,
it has no place in this comic. I'm not
yeah,
saying
it's
that.
Really strange.
I'm not saying that comics can't tell stories where that is, you know,
a theme
yeah.
or something to deal with,
or something that's appropriate
or, yeah.
to what's going on. But I feel like in this case, and in superhero yeah. comics, almost in general, unless they really. I don't know what I'm trying to. It's like you have to be a mature comic to deal with that kind of.
Yeah, it's really weird and casual
subject
in
material.
This. It's just kind of
yeah.
like
yeah.
It's just like thrown in a
like,
really
give
weird
me some sugar and she's
yeah,
like
just to like set up like how tough she is as a
yeah and it seems really
situations
it seems
not,
really voyeuristic and exploitative yeah. and really dumb and it really has put me off this comic
which is
really
weird because it's written by a woman
think, yeah I mean that's that not would. That weird I mean you know writers make bad choices
yeah.
whether
yeah,
they're men or women but yeah so. That put me off, and I also don't see how that aspect of the story is even relevant to anything that's going to
no.
go on in the rest of the story.
No, it's just to show that she's tough. Or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just it's a.
But they
gimmick.
Could have done that in so
yeah.
many other ways.
Yeah,
it's
so.
Like a it's a lazy writer trick.
Yeah,
it's like the sort of thing of like threatening a child.
But even
you just
it's
to show
even
that someone's
like,
evil, you know,
or like killing a dog. Or
yeah,
whatever.
You can't
yeah.
write something better. Basically,
it's not even that because like the setup for it is like this jock asked this nerdy girl out, and he's like, meet me by the bleachers, and you know, something bad's
I don't want to talk about it anymore. It was in bad taste.
Moving on. The story was pretty good, though. Most of it. Like, as a good fantasy adventure thing, it just had that weird element.
I thought the Beowulf story was awesome.
The Beowulf thing is crazy.
It is, like, almost just pure action and,
sci-fi nonsense.
It's, like, post-apocalyptic version of the traditional Beowulf story. Except Beowulf is like this cryogenically frozen warrior.
It's old.
And these tribe wants him to come help them fight this monster Grendel that keeps killing people in the king's mead hall. Which is exactly like
Beowulf. You just ramp it up with awesome apocalyptic stuff and
bomb shelters,
uber violence, and helmets.
And it's like the thing, like Tony Bedard is. Were we even doing this podcast when like we were hating on Tony Bedard all the time? But this is the kind of thing that he's good at, I feel like.
Yeah.
He's kind of just epic, like over-the-top stories. Uh-huh. And I think he does a good job with this. And I think Jesus Saiz's art is actually really good.
And he
really
seems, he's unrestrained by any editorial mandates, I feel, because, you know, this doesn't take place in any... I mean, I am assuming it takes place in a DC universe, I guess.
He's just telling a cool story.
But it doesn't need to, you know.
Yeah. Actually, going back quickly to Amethyst, just because we're talking about art, I feel like Aaron Lopresti, who does the art for Amethyst, is usually a person I really like who has this really crisp, clean style that could almost be compared to like Frank Cho or something like that. Yeah. And I feel like in this, it's just really badly colored
and colored over.
It's really odd.
And it gives it that kind of... like old Salvador La Roca extreme X-Men kind of feel, and it's just not it's not good times.
Yep.
Yeah, but anyway, overall I think a decent comic, just marred by one or two things.
Yeah, there's one or two weird choices, but...
yeah, we'll see where it goes from here, but it, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Be warned. How's
there's no inks in it, just so you know. It just says art by Aaron Lopresti, so I'm assuming he just...
And then colored by Hi-Fi.
I think Hi-Fi blew out the
pencils. Some sort of computer.
Anyway.
Coloring studio.
That needs to go away at some point.
Yeah.
All right.
Some people are good at it, but a lot of
Not
people
many.
Aren't. All right, so up next we got another new number zero from DC. This is Team 7 number zero by Justin Jordan and Jesus Marino.
Our Justin Jordan,
yeah. And... yeah, I don't know. I was confused when I initially read this. I always tend to miss the things at the beginning that say like 5 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. So I didn't actually understand what was going on. And then like I was like, Nick, what is going on? Is this from 5 years ago or something? And then he told
me. DC Comics proudly presents Before the New 52.
Yeah. And I was like, why is Shunka from Scalped in this book?
And I feel like we all had differing opinions on this.
We did.
Well, let's start with Jared, because Jared, you had a fairly positive opinion of this.
I like this book quite a bit. Basically, Team 7 is another reference to the old Wildstorm universe that got folded into DC and then is now part of the new 52 DC universe. Team 7 was basically, as far as I can remember, a team of like special forces guys who might have had superpowers. I honestly don't remember, but they're like the special forces guys in a superhero universe. And so this being a zero issue, like Kevin said, is set 5 years before the current-ish timeline of DC Comics. So this is the origin story where they're putting the team together, introducing all these tough military special forces, weird, you know, forces guys, and making the team. And there's some interesting, like, you look at the picture on the cover, and there's some ones where you're like, oh, that's Grifter. You know, it's like
it's
a lot of stuff
it's
like that.
It's Deathstroke.
Yeah,
it's a bunch of other random.
Yeah.
Amanda Waller.
Is that Robot Man?
I don't know who some of these characters are.
That's the thing.
Are.
Yeah, I didn't recognize Deathstroke at the time.
Who's the main character?
So.
Like, is that
no
supposed
idea.
To be Tim Drake's mom?
Her name's Dinah Drake. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Wow, maybe she's Black Canary, got married.
Yeah, that's what, I have no
anyway,
idea.
Anyway, like I said, it's Justin Jordan, and I think this is the kind of book he's good at writing, like this kind of action. This reads like a... someone described it as like Ocean's 11 sort of film, but like with more violence, you know. So it's like
I could see that. It's
stuff.
That kind of getting the band together.
Yeah,
thing. Yeah.
And they're all tough dudes, and they're all on. So it's like cutting from here's a cool mission, let's get this guy, and then cut to another cool mission where we get the next woman to join the team and stuff like that.
I'm with you for most of that, except for the cool part.
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't really get into. I don't know. It was kind of. It was boring me a little bit. It kind of reminded me of the like Challengers of the Unknown issue that came out, and then it kind of reminded me of Black Hawks a little bit.
Oof, but both of those were terrible, and this I enjoyed.
Well, I didn't really like it, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I'm somewhere in between. I kind of liked the little bits and pieces of it. Like, I thought Grifter's introduction was pretty funny. But I think one of the biggest problems I had with this is I was like, why does this book exist? Because, like, I mean, they're like a group that's monitoring superheroes, which is basically what Stormwatch is. And
Stormwatch,
like,
are superheroes.
But they have like a space station, and they're fighting the same things. And some of them are super powered too.
Is that a little bit of the problem of launching the book with a number zero issue? Because is this regular book going to take place 5 years later than this? I mean, I assume so.
No. Yeah.
No?
No, it all takes place in the past.
The series will always be in the past?
Yeah.
Oh,
because
I didn't know that.
If you guys read Suicide Squad number zero.
Nope.
As I did not. But somebody told me that in Suicide Squad number zero, it's the forming of the first Suicide Squad, which is right after Team 7 disbands, because Amanda Waller's in that as well.
So if you're talking about not having any purpose. I mean, because I guess maybe, well, no, I was going to say Stormwatch wasn't around, but Stormwatch has been around for thousands of years.
I guess it's a way to kind of introduce characters to the last 5 years of the DC universe through their eyes. You know?
I think
a weird way to do it, too.
Doesn't that make aren't they making their new continuity really confusing by having two timelines that are going on at the same time?
Not necessarily, but they're doing it in a way that makes it really confusing. Like, you know, they could do it as a challenge to do, like, stuff. It's just they're not doing it very well.
Featuring skinny Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
It was like, well, I guess it's just their whole thing of they wanted to relaunch the line, but they didn't want to change Batman and Green Lantern.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think this was terrible. It just wasn't enough to really get me excited. I'm not a big fan of the art.
That's the part I skipped because
you skipped the art?
No, I skipped talking about it. Because
sometimes you do skip the art.
Yeah, I have to sometimes.
It's pretty bad.
The art on this is okay, but especially, like I said, for being such an action-packed book, there are literally segments where you're just like, did something just happen there that was written about, like something cool happened as they punched and you didn't get to see it? You know, it's just like he's not a good dynamic storyteller for this kind of action-packed, you know, crime thriller comic.
Yeah, like some of his storytelling stuff is really weird. Like there's a part where I think you're supposed to kind of be surprised that Deathstroke, like, you don't know who he is, and then he shoots somebody.
Yep.
But the person he shoots is off-panel, and you've never even seen the person in another panel. So, like, as far as you know, he's just shooting, like, into thin air.
Yep, and then there's one where, like, they kick down a door and someone gets shot mysteriously, but it's set up that you think they shot him. And so you lose the dynamic of what just happened. You're like, because you don't know what...
You don't get enough of an introduction to these characters. I feel like by the end, I had no idea who anybody was or what their motivations were.
Yeah, like, that was the thing. I knew what situations they were in, but I wasn't getting any sense of motivation or what the team really is or anything like that.
Yeah, they're supposed to monitor superhumans, I think, or something. But killing them? I don't know.
Either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Team 7, I don't know. I'm definitely going to check out the number one issue and see if it just feels a little bit different than this.
It's a mixed bag.
I think some of Justin Jordan's writing in here is pretty good, but it's just, I don't know, it's wrapped around something that I'm just not that interested in, I guess.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So we got one more book this week. This is Trail of Steel, 1441 A.D., this is a graphic novel by Marcos Matu Mestre.
Sure.
Is that pretty good?
got me.
Yeah. This guy's a pretty cool artist. He did a book called Framed Ink that's all about lighting in comics. That's really interesting. If you're somebody that draws comics, I think it's worth checking out.
Good lighting in this.
Yeah. And his lighting in this is great. Yeah, he does everything digitally, but it has a very pen and ink
good
look
Lord.
To it. And, I think he's a guy that does digital really well.
Kind of he does.
Charlie Adler-ish at times.
Yeah, but even more, way more detailed than that, I feel like. So the main story of this, it's like simple and complicated at the
right.
same time.
It's a simple story with complicated, like, twist to everything.
Yeah, well, the basic gist of it is just a father and son.
Yeah, there's this older soldier and his son, and basically he's ordered to go on one more mission and then he can retire. And the mission is to deliver these prisoners to
three prisoners
to the is it the queen?
That doesn't even
it's like the lady.
Yeah, it's all
and then he'll have to execute one of them and then basically he'll be able to retire.
Yep.
But as they go on this trip, various things happen. They're attacked by bandits. He becomes very curious about a satchel that this woman is carrying, which kind
who
of
who these prisoners are.
Yeah, and kind of what the nature of this mission is. And things go south very quick.
Yes.
Basically. And all that is kind of just used to as a container for some action set pieces and things, right. which I think are really well delivered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the story is very secondary to this book.
Yeah, that's it. You know, there's a few like, oh, that's what you're trying to do, but nothing super impressive as a storytelling thing. See, but
yeah, even at the end,
I felt like at the end is where it started. Actually,
it does get that's true. I feel like the end of the book, there's like, it's weird because a lot of things are happening, but it feels very stagnant. And then and then the end of the book sort of starts to build up more, and then by the end you realize that this is the beginning of a story.
Yeah.
It's like reading the first 10 pages of Lone Wolf and Cub or something,
yeah. right.
but as an entire graphic novel.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, I did enjoy it a good bit, actually.
Yeah, I like the art a lot. And the story, like, it took me a little while to get into it, but once I got into it, it was really cool. And the mysteries in it were very interesting. And
yeah, it's hard to get a sense of, like, what is going on, like
right.
like kind of what
so many things are so obliquely referenced, or
yeah, like what the situation in the world is
yeah.
at the point when this book starts, kind of. And but as it goes on, you get a little bit more of a sense of that, but you still kind of don't, like, a lot of the things that happen seem very random and not influenced by any other elements of the story that have already been introduced or anything. And part of that might be translation, because I'm assuming this guy is French.
Or Spanish.
Or Spanish.
Is this in Spain?
It's set in Spain. Yeah.
Yeah, it is set in Spain. Yeah.
So his name's Marcos, so.
Yeah, that's not a very French name, is it? Yeah. Yeah, but overall, I mean, the art is enough to carry this book for me.
Awesome.
Yeah, I really so enjoyed it. And there's like a lot of nice, like in the back, there's like a lot, like design notes and a lot of art stuff in the back too, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so if you think of this as an art book, it's a really cool book.
Yeah, with a decent story.
Yeah, with a decent story carrying it through. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll definitely read Trail of Steel 1445 or whatever the next one's going to be. Yeah, and definitely check out his other book, though. If you see this and you like the art, he has a book called Framed Ink that's really interesting, where he just talks about lighting techniques in comics.
I do want to check that out.
Yeah, it's a cool book.
Good stuff.
Well, that's it for this week. I mean, there was definitely some really good stuff. I feel like like we were poo-pooing some stuff towards the end there. But
some great comic.
But overall, Doctor Strange season one alone was
Doctor Strange, Hypo.
The Hypo's so good.
Yeah, some good stuff this week. We'll be back early next week with our SPX explosion thing. We can't call it that because somebody already has a thing called that.
Really?
All right.
Yeah. So we'll call it the XPX.
SPX to see.
There we go. SP Ecstasy this Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever.
Hoo-ha.
And then we'll be back also next week with a regular podcast. So I guess
double podcast week.
Indeed. So we'll see you guys then.
See ya.
Bye.